All right. Let me just save this spot. Okay. Last week, Jenny began the book of Leviticus with Parsha Vayikra, and she gave an enthusiastic and inspiring drash on the book. She also discussed its reputation for long, dry, boring sections on ritual. But she highlighted how the book of Exodus ended with the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, so that God could take up residence with his people in their very neighborhood, and how Leviticus picks up from there with how to approach God through the tabernacle service, and how to obtain and retain cleanliness and holiness for that interaction, as well as for daily life. I've spent a lot of time talking about the Torah in terms of its wisdom when I give my drashas, its practical application to improve and to transform our lives. I hadn't really emphasized the relationship with God that God himself calls us to throughout the Torah. And a very important part of the pattern for that relationship is here in Leviticus. My drashas tended to emphasize the wisdom of the Torah and the power that it has to improve your life. As a lifelong believer, in my mind, there is always a background of a relationship of God or with God in the context of all that wisdom that can be applied to your life. The Torah contains vital and powerful wisdom. It is only part of the picture, though. The Word of God is alive, and it contains not only the wisdom of God, but also an appeal for humanity to enter into a relationship with the God of the universe. To ignore that is to miss out on the person of God in one's life, to take the wisdom and throw away the relationship. I'll put it another way. Imagine you could take the wisdom and knowledge and experience of a person that you know and care about and download it into your mind and into your way of life. But as a cost for that benefit, you had to lose the relationship with that person from beginning to end, as if it never happened. Would you do it? Would you do it for a friend or a parent or a spouse? Of course we wouldn't, and therein lies my point. We should read the Bible not only for God's wisdom, but also to engage in a daily, active, and vibrant relationship with him. I think my emphasis on the wisdom of Torah has come from my lifelong reliance on the scriptures and on the religious community for help. Help to change my life for the better. Help to make me more stable and happy and able to function and cope. And, of course, to be a godlier person, just a more righteous person, what we all attain to. The wisdom of God has worked for me and has worked powerfully to change me from the inside out. And so, of course, I'm very excited to talk about that aspect of Scripture. I think it has also come from, I think my emphasis on the wisdom of Torah has also come from my trying to appeal to people. Appealing to people who do not have faith or who have lost their faith, to show that the scriptures were right when they said this or that, or commanded such and such, or when I try to demonstrate that God was, and I lost it again, sorry. Or when I try to demonstrate that God was and has always been perfectly reasonable and loving. I do my best to answer their concerns, concerns which I most often find valid and reasonable. Their concerns are logical, and if those concerns remain unanswered, they will, of course, not want to move forward into a life of faith. I've always hoped that by presenting the Torah as full of wisdom, that it will cause people to reconsider the whole package that the Torah represents. However, in my attempts to make God and the things of God look reasonable, I've tended to shy away from the aspect of a living relationship with God. I know that people think of religious faith in general and the Judeo-Christian faiths in particular. They think of them as a collection of bizarre fairy tales, legends which only contain a grain of truth and maybe some good advice. And they think that certainly none of the supernatural stuff ever happened. I think it's put best by a George Carlin bit. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do, every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish For he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. It's an extreme example, but a lot of people look at religion that way, which is why I think that bit works really well. So when I talk of God's wisdom, I don't talk as much about the relationship with God because it smacks of Carlin's invisible man. I can talk for a long time about God's wisdom and I'll look pretty smart. And the life of the religious will look a little more doable for the person that I'm talking to. But to try to tell them to start talking to that invisible man, to have a relationship with him, it'll make us all look foolish. Worse, it'll make me look foolish, and I hate to look foolish. But at the heart of the Torah is the relationship with God. And it's from millennia of people in relationship with God that all of the wisdom of God was transmitted to human beings and written down in the Torah. To take the wisdom of God from the Torah without ever coming to know the God behind it all, well, that's a tragic loss. And it denies the origin of all that wisdom, a personal relationship with God. It does seem foolish. It seems as absurd as the relationship with Carlin's invisible man. But I've tried it, and God exists, and he answers prayers. Prayers asking for a relationship with him. Prayers for help with personal struggles and with cultivating discipline. Prayers asking for wisdom. I know God is with me even as I am human and fallible. And it is remiss for me to discuss the wisdom of God without also being prepared to discuss the relationship with him. Speaking of faith confidently shows people the strength of your conviction, and it may inspire them to look into something they thought before was foolish, and to think that maybe they should take it seriously. To illustrate this, here's a quote from one of my favorite books, Alice Through the Looking Glass. In this passage, Alice has just asked the White Queen her age. "I'm just 101, 5 months and a day." "I can't believe that," said Alice. "Can't you?" said the Queen in a pitying tone. "Try again. Draw a long breath and shut your eyes." Alice laughed. "There's no use trying," she said. "One can't believe impossible things." "Well, I dare say you haven't had much practice," said the Queen. "When I was your age, I always did it for a half hour a day. Why, sometimes I've believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast." Faith looks foolish to many types of people, even well-meaning, sensible, but nevertheless uncertain people. Sometimes when you appeal to them, you just have to own it. After all, it is what we believe. This all reminds me of a saying from the Pirkei Avot, which boggled me for a long time. Pirkei Avot is a tractate of the Mishnah, and it's filled with wise sayings. Indeed, one translation of the title, Pirkei Avot, is Sayings of the Fathers. Anyway, the specific verse from Pirkei Avot, which I found boggling, was, "Rabbi Eliezer, son of Kuzma, says, the laws of bird sacrifices and nidah are the core of Jewish law. Astronomical calculations and gematria are enhancements to wisdom." In the middle of the Pirkei Avot, a godly book prized for its wisdom, is the statement that the very core is ritual stuff having to do with a relationship with God. And it's not just any ritual stuff, because nida means ritual impurity due to the menstruation cycle. And in context, the bird sacrifices have to do with offerings given around impurity caused by genital discharges. I'm sorry if I've made anyone squeamish, but it's in the text. In fact, Leviticus 15 is coming up soon in Parsha Mitzora. But why on earth, and this is what boggled me, why did Rabbi Eliezer say this is the core of Jewish law? Why not the Ten Commandments? Why not the Shema? Why not the summation of the Torah by Hillel, a summation almost identical to what Yeshua says? And here Hillel says, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow. This is the whole Torah. The rest is explanation. Go and learn." But no, Eliezer says it's nidah and bird sacrifices. Rabbi Eliezer called these the core, and he contrasted them with the somewhat mysterious and complicated techniques of astronomical calculations, which might have been used for things like
calculating auspicious days or other readings of the heavens, and gematria, which is the calculation of numerical values of letters and words, and looking for patterns and textual hints hidden in the Torah. As an aside, I've always been amused that the Hebrew word for smoke is ashan, and it's, I don't know what the term is, gematriacal? Anyway, its numerical value is 420, so make of that what you will. So there's an example of gematria. But astronomical calculations and gematria, Rabbi Eliezer called enhancements to wisdom. I didn't put this in here, but I did think of it. You ever see like a really souped-up car and it has like the spoiler and like, you know, the big, I don't know, what are those pipe things? Mufflers? You know, like fancy mufflers? Pipe things, what am I saying? Anyway, like they look really impressive, but could you imagine taking that really impressive spoiler and putting it on a Pinto? The spoiler is an enhancement to something that's already good. And I think Rabbi Eliezer was calling these fancy calculations and this gematria an enhancement to what the core thing is. Anyway, I think Rabbi Eliezer was combating the idea that the core itself is wisdom. Not so. The core is relationship with God, a relationship of vitality and holiness. The fancy esoteric techniques which make people look wise and knowledgeable and smart are often mistaken for the core. For example, I saw in the religious section of a bookstore about a year and a half ago a Christian book based on the Talmudic tale of Choni the Circle Drawer. Great story, great couple stories concerning him. I inspected this particular book for a few moments, and I saw the author was teaching his readers to pray circles around things that they wanted or wanted success in or healing or whatever else. The author had taken a good story completely out of context and was teaching people to do something wholly divorced from both Christianity and Judaism. The author got it badly wrong in a way Rabbi Eliezer cautioned against. He mistook what one man did as the core of the faith and is teaching others to do the same. It looks appealing because it's new and exciting and exotic, and it seems to hold up with the quite vague notion of Jewish roots, something we tangle with regularly here. But boy, was this author ever wrong. And his book is part of what I've noticed is a disturbing pattern, a pattern in which a lot of new and exotic things are misappropriated and misapplied, which then become very popular because of the mystique of hidden knowledge. In conclusion, I'd like to amplify Rabbi Eliezer's wisdom and our own cantor Jenny's wisdom. The core is here in Leviticus. Much wisdom can be learned without God, but the best, fullest life and the greatest wisdom comes with a relationship with God. It is unthinkable for us to trade our whole relationships with mom or dad, beginning to end, in exchange for instantly downloading their wisdom and experience into us. It's just as unthinkable to do the same with God. I would urge anyone who's listening to this now or in the future to not seek God's wisdom and miss God himself. Don't put the cart before the horse. Don't put the enhancements to wisdom above the core of Torah. The core is the relationship, and a huge part of that relationship is detailed in Leviticus, as it says, "Be holy, for I am holy." I urge us all, including and especially myself, to keep studying and study hard, to work on our relationships with God and foster a desire for a relationship with God in others by the way that you live, by the way you speak, and by the way that you share God's wisdom. But be careful to point to the God behind it all, who so desperately wants relationships with every one of his creations. It is our minhag, or custom here, to have a short time of reflection. And I'll keep the time. Shabbat shalom.